that very same sensitivity that makes you able to learn language just like that as a little infant makes you highly vulnerable to chaos, threat, inconsistency, unpredictability,
violence.
And so children are much more sensitive to developmental trauma than adults.
So if you're a child who's raised in a nurturing and well-cared for environment, you're more likely to have a well-wired brain.
Correct.
And if you're a child who's raised in an environment of chaos, of uncertainty, of violence, of neglect, you are being wired
differently.
Differently.
And typically in a way that makes you more vulnerable. Kids that grow up like that have much higher rates of risk for mental health problems, much higher rates of risk for doing poorly in school.
For just functioning in the world.
Exactly.
So you just heard a bit of a 60 Minutes interview Oprah had with Dr. Bruce Perry, who's our guest for the next two episodes of the Coaching Culture podcast. Now, after Nate and I interviewed him, the first thing I said was, this is possibly the most important episode we have done to date. Every coach, teacher, administrator, anybody in sports, they need to hear this message. Well, then as I was editing the podcast, I was also kind of listening back on some of Oprah's interviews with Dr. Perry. And I heard her say on Good Morning America that her 60-minute story with Dr. Bruce Perry on childhood trauma was, and I quote, "It had more impact on me than practically anything I've ever done." Now, it's really important to me as a coach for two really big reasons. First, because more and more of our athletes that we're working with have endured what Dr. Perry calls big T trauma in their life. As coaches, we feel very ill-equipped, though, to support them at times. And Dr. Perry shares some powerful ways that we can support them. The other big reason this episode is so important is because sports provide stress every day for athletes. That stress can be good. It can be good if we lead, we interact, and we regulate our own stress response in the correct way. If we do that, we're gonna use the stress of sports to help build resilience and healthy relationships. But we have to get this right, because if we don't get it right, as coaches, as parents, or as administrators, then their sporting experience can just become another source of trauma in their life. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast. I'm JP Nurbin alongside my co-host Nate Sanderson. And every week in 30 minutes or less, we're giving you transformational leadership tools and strategies. This podcast is brought to you by Thrive on Challenge, which provides mentorship for coaches to help them grow as a coach and build their culture. You can learn more at thriveonchallenge.com. You're listening to episode 126, Helping Athletes to Regulate Their Stress Response System with Dr. Bruce Perry, Part 1. Coach, you want a player-led program where you don't feel you have to drive and police the behaviors of your team. You want a team culture where people feel connected and respected. You want players who are not only self-aware, but can self-regulate their own emotional responses. Now, if you want to go deeper than the podcast, if you really want to get it right next season, one of the most affordable ways to do that as a coach and potentially as a coaching staff is to attend our live coaching culture workshops. Our next one is April 5th in Chicago. And you're not just going to be learning more, but you'll be really working with other coaches, working with your own staff to develop a clear plan and process for implementing player-led systems and emotional intelligence strategies as a whole program. Check out the link in the episode details or go to thriveonchallenge.com/public-workshop to register for this very affordable workshop. We have an early bird special pricing that's going to go away in March. So don't miss out on the reduced rate. Register today. Now let's get into today's episode. So no doubt you are wondering, who is this Dr. Perry? Well, after reading his book, The Boy Who Was Raised as a Dog, I wrote an article for sports parents based on his work and the work of Martin Seligman. And Dr. Perry retweeted this article, and it kind of opened up the door for this kind of incredible opportunity to have him as a guest in the podcast. Not only has he been one of the most influential guests Oprah has ever interviewed, but Dr. Perry has served as a consultant and expert witness on many high-profile incidents, involving traumatized children, and a few that you would recognize, which are the Columbine shooting, the Oklahoma City bombing, and the Waco siege. His clinical research and practice focuses on examining the long-term effects of trauma in children and adolescents and adults. And it's been really instrumental in understanding how traumatic events in a childhood and in someone's childhood change the biology of their brain. And like I said, he's written a few books, one of them being The Boy Who Was Raised as a Dog, which I know it sounds kind of disturbing, but it's actually incredibly enlightening and a very, very good read, not too sciencey for us coaches. The other great thing about this interview today is he's also a sports guy, right? He's in the North Dakota Sports Hall of Fame as a track and field athlete. He loves sport and knows it can not only be transformational for young people, but actually therapeutic for the victims of trauma. So Dr. Perry, one of the things I read in your book, The Boy That Was Raised as a Dog, that I found just alarming was that statistic that around 40% of American children are going to have at least one potentially traumatizing experience by age 18. Now, when I hear that, I'm like, that means nearly half my team has endured potentially some traumatic experience in their life. So we need to be aware of exactly what trauma is. So can you kind of tell a little bit about what constitutes trauma and what we from a medical standpoint?
Yeah, well, first of all, that's a really important question. Obviously, people use that term all the time, right? It's traumatic this, trauma that. And so it is important to get a clearer definition of what it is. But what I would like to talk about also are the things that are influencing your athletes that aren't the big capital T trauma. And we'll get to that in a minute, but let's start with the capital T trauma. So a traumatic event is basically something that will activate the stress response systems in somebody and in a way that leaves an enduring change in that system. So we have these systems in our body that allow us to basically deal with transitions and novelty and threat. And usually these systems activate when we need them, and then they go back to their baseline when the threat is over. Let's say it's an athletic competition, right? So you get nervous before the big game, your stress response system gets jacked up a little bit. In the beginning of the game, you may sort of overperform, you throw too high, you throw too hard, but you settle in because your stress response system kind of gets back down a little bit into a functional area. And then when the event's over, you get back to your baseline. And so we have these systems that involve our brain and body that have this flexibility. And a traumatic experience is when you have either an extreme event, let's say you witness a school shooting, you witness domestic violence, you see somebody shot on the street if you live in a community permeated with violence, and your stress response system will activate, but it doesn't get back to baseline. So you walk around every day, sitting in class, interacting with your teammates, as if you're in a baseline state of fear. And what that does is it influences the way you think, the way you behave, the way you perform in sport and so forth. And so those are obviously the capacity to adapt in the moment is really important, but the inability to get back to baseline leads to the problems that we run into. And so kids end up getting labeled ADHD because they don't really have ADHD, but they have this stress response related hypervigilance. Any little noise that will distract them, and any little shove will turn into sort of like, what are you doing to me? And they develop this fear-based set of behaviors. And I'm sure lots of people listening who are coaches are thinking about kids that they've worked with that, wow, yeah, that he was like that. He was like, he would overreact to the tiniest little things. And that, not always, but frequently, is related to sort of exposure to some sort of traumatic event that caused that shift.
Now, you were mentioning there's the big T trauma, but you're also talking about, I guess, the littler T trauma as far as through, right, potentially through like the sporting experience.
Well, the little T trauma is something that, and I don't want to get too sciencey here, but the key thing, and that, again, this is something that people that are interested in sports and training can appreciate. The key thing about changing a muscle is the pattern of activation of the muscle, right? So you lift weights at a certain, the weight is enough to challenge the muscle, but not too much to tear it or overwhelm it. And you have a pattern of activation that's moderate and predictable, right? 10 reps, rest, 10 reps, rest, 10 reps, rest, and then have a long space, like 2 days before you do that again. And so the pattern of how you activate the muscle influences how it becomes more capable. It becomes stronger. It's functionally improved. It's the same thing with the stress response. So if you activate the stress response in moderate, controllable ways, the stress response gets basically stronger. It gets more flexible. You're much more capable of managing a significant challenge. That's why, for example, practice at speed is important, or having game-like elements to your practices, so that there's enough pressure to activate your stress response in a moderate way, so that when you really have a challenge, like in the game, you're going to be able to perform at a better level. And so that's the healthy pattern of activating the stress response: moderate, predictable, controllable, and that leads to resilience. The other pattern is unpredictability. So if you activate your stress response system in an unpredictable way, what'll happen is the biology basically says, I don't know what the hell I'm supposed to do here. I mean, you know, sometimes I'm supposed to be on, sometimes I'm not. I'm just going to stay on all the time because I never know what's coming around the corner. And so some of these changes that cause problems can be caused by a big capital T trauma can also take place if you are in a situation where there is unpredictability, where there's uncontrollability. And so if you have a coach or a teacher who is unpredictable, you know, 1 minute their expectations seem clear and then the kid does that and the teacher will reward them. The next day they come and do the same thing and the teacher gets mad about something. And, you know, that unpredictability leads to the sense of like you're walking on eggshells, right? And everybody's had that experience of working with somebody who's like, I never know where the hell you're going to be. And so you're just, it makes you what we call sensitized. And so there's a couple of things that can cause that are the very common in athletics. One is sort of coaching unpredictability. If you're not a consistent person, if you apply consequences unfairly or in an unequal way, everybody on the team begins to feel like you don't know where you stand with this person. It's inconsistent. Are you going to be one of the favored people or one of the non-favored people? And that's toxic to team cohesion, as you guys know. So that's one thing. The other thing that's very common is if you are a minority child in a majority population. So if you are poor and the rest of the kids in the class have money, if you're black and the rest of the kids are Caucasian, and so there's this sense of being out, not being part of the in-group that can lead to these little bits of unpredictability and so forth. And so a lot of the kids that we work with in sports have other factors, poverty, racism, income inequality, that create these patterns of stress response sensitization that makes them have basically a physiology as if they were traumatized. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And it's actually one of the things I was kind of curious to ask about, you know, is kind of not just how to help people that have experienced big T trauma. I think we can circle back to that in a second, but how the sporting experience itself can be helpful, like you said, build resilience. But in my experience, it's not only did it build some resilience, but I had, and I've shared it before in the podcast a little bit before, but I had some anxiety and depression as a high school athlete. And reflecting back on that experience now, I feel much of that came from struggling with performance identity challenges I had, as well as a high school coach who some would say he's toughing up, making men out of us, and others would say that's emotionally abusive. And I right. think that's there is a big question in sports today. Parents are raising it. People in the media are raising it. I know it's become a really big conversation in Canada, even at the professional hockey level, of where is this line that it's becoming traumatic or we're actually building resilience? You know, because I think so many people say, well, I'm making these kids tough. And other people are going, no, that's abuse. You know, that's going to create some trauma for my son or my daughter or for that individual.
You know, JP, that issue is really important. It's important in the corporate sector. It's important in education. It's important in parenting, and it's really important in coaching. I want people to think back to those patterns I talked about. If you are consistent, and everybody's working hard, and everybody's having the same challenge, you're going to build resilience. But if you're inconsistent, if you yell at one kid, and I'm not saying you should ever yell, but that if you have any inconsistency in the way you interact or have expectations, that leads to these situations where you're not actually helping somebody by having these harsh, basically semi-abusive practices. And so if you look out at the most successful coaches, and there are going to be times when they get frustrated and they blow up. There's no doubt about it. But if you look at them in a practice, by and large, they're providing very consistent, predictable, relationally engaging practices. They're trying to build a sense of community. And people even use the term of family, the sense of family. They're trying to make people respect each other. They're trying to demonstrate flexibility with the differences that different kids present you in a way that's still fair. And it's a hard thing to do, but it can definitely be done. There's no doubt that there's this prevailing myth that you can toughen people up by being abusive to them. And that's just false. You're just literally, if you have somebody who performs well and under an abusive coach, it's because they have a lot of talent. And if they had a better coach, they'd perform better. You know, if they had a coach that was more relational and respectful, they would perform better. And so what happens is people will use the one really talented kid as an example of how their coaching practices are great. Look at so-and-so. But they crushed five other people. And that one kid had brought resilience into the team, and the coach's abusive behaviors weren't enough to break it. So it's interesting the way people use these examples. I'm sure you guys are thinking about coaches right now who you've had conversations with who said, oh, yeah, look at so-and-so. He's in the NFL now, and I coached him. Well, the reality is he'd be an all-pro if you had coached him well. And, you know, just because he made it to the NFL doesn't mean that you did that. Anyway.
Yeah, no, that's key. I mean, we're talking about other coaches, but even myself, I think early on in coaching, I was very much like I had experienced coaching. I was a yeller, a screamer. And my rationale was, it's my personality. I'm passionate. I'm intense. And also, those guys can take it. I don't do it to the guys that can't take it. And what you're saying is that there's such an importance of being consistent across the board for the athletes, you know, that and that's really important, because I know there's a lot of times I would justify too, well, these kids got on to be successful, but I had four or five other kids that quit because they just couldn't take it or just had miserable experiences as well. So,
and again, I don't want to give the impression that you shouldn't be passionate, and yelling sometimes is a completely appropriate thing. But then you come back and you say, listen, I lost it, right? You know, you say, listen, I shouldn't yell. That's not the way, you know, I need to model for you under pressure. There's better ways to do things. And let's kind of get back together and, if you regulate yourself, you're going to regulate your players, and then you're going to be in a position where they're going to hear you, and you're going to connect with them in more meaningful ways. And the key thing, and I want everybody who's a coach to hear this, all human communication is about rupture and repair, right? We're always making mistakes in communication, but then how do you repair that? You know, how do you go back and say, all right, listen, okay, it's clear you guys didn't understand what I was trying to say here. Instead of saying, you're stupid, you're not listening, you're like, all right, let me think about a better way to communicate that. And you repair that rupture. And the more you repair those ruptures, the closer these people get to you. And so it's not, you can't, don't hold yourself to some unrealistic, you know, standard. There's going to be ruptures, but the secret sauce is in the repair.
No, I love that. And I think what you've hit on, you know, is just providing that consistent environment. When we do make mistakes, come in there and fix it. I think that those are really helpful. And what you're kind of pointing at here is it's not just going to keep our kids from experiencing something traumatic from their sporting experience, but also it should help their performance, right? Like you said earlier on,
absolutely,
you know, they're going to be able to perform in the big game when the pressure does come.
Yeah. Cause they're going to be people yelling at them.
Yeah, exactly. So I kind of want to shift a little bit on my piece here, which is just, we talked about big T trauma because this is important. We have coaches that we work with, and I've had experience with players that come from backgrounds where they've seen family members that were shot. They've been, you know, victims of abuse, you know, that are still living in traumatic experiences. Not even just had that one thing, but they go home to a home that is, they feel constantly unsafe. So as coaches, this is really difficult because I think we're constantly walking on eggshells. How do we help this person? You know, when we try to address the behavior, sometimes they respond really, you know, brashly or get very emotional. When we try to connect with them, they want nothing to do with us because maybe there's not that trust there. So you have incredible experience in this. From a coaching perspective, though, what are some things you might be able to offer us to be able to help us in those situations?
Yeah, you know, here's the dilemma of coaching. And it's kind of the dilemma of any aggregate care process. And what I mean by that is if you get 10 people in a room, there are going to be 10 different stories, and there's going to be 10 different sets of strengths and vulnerabilities. And if you're trying to create consistency, that doesn't necessarily mean you treat everybody the same. It just means that you're consistent in the way you're respectful to the person you're engaging and interacting with. And so that's kind of that's a big challenge, as you guys know. You know, anybody who's coached, you know that to communicate a concept to one kid is going to require different activities and skills and words than to another kid. And so if you've got kids that have had trauma, there's a few things that you're going to predictably see. When somebody has a history of being exposed to a capital T trauma, these stress response systems change. And they change in usually two key ways. One is that the system that allows you to fight or flee gets more active. And so these kids are usually right on the edge of walking out of practice or blowing up on somebody. And so if that's the case, you need to think about, are there ways that I can regulate this kid so that he's a little bit more down this sort of, he's a little calmer. And again, none of you will be surprised to hear that one of the most powerful ways to regulate somebody is to use pattern, repetitive, rhythmic motor activity. So when this kid's walking or running or doing these things, they find that regulating. They feel less anxious when they're actually performing, and they'll talk to you about it. They'll literally say, I feel like the whole world goes away and all my troubles dissolve when I get on the field and I play. That's one of the things that attracts them to the sport. And so remember that when you have one of these kids that you want to talk with, you need to give them a ball to dribble while you're talking with him, or you need to have a conversation with him while you're in parallel with them and you're both taking shots at the free, you know, you're just shooting the ball. You're going to be more successful connecting with him if you're in parallel, as opposed to making him sit and not move Because he, in fact, I'll bet you, if you put him in, make him come into your office and sit across the desk from you, he's going to be wiggling his leg and he's going to be shifting his body and he's going to be sort of twirling with shit on your desk, and because they're jumping out of their skin. But if you let them regulate by moving and then you talk, you're going to be much more successful at connecting with them and then getting to the reasoning part of their brain, the top part of their brain. And then they'll hear you. But if they stay dysregulated, they're in kind of an inescapable, unavoidable situation. Like, they, you know, the only way they can deal with that, they're trapped, basically, when they're in your office. So they'll use another one of the forms of adaptation, which we call dissociation. And so when people are in an inescapable, unavoidable, and potentially painful or distressing situation, and fighting and fleeing isn't an option, they shut down. And so what they'll do at the part of that shutdown response is to basically say or give the nonverbal signals that will get you out of that situation. And so what they do is you'll be talking with them and you'll say, remember that time when you're doing this and you're going down the court and they look at you and they kind of have this glassy look and they nod and your brain goes, oh yeah, they're getting it. And then you go back out on the field the next day, you're back on the court. He does the same damn thing. And you're like, what? Like, we just talked about this. And he's like, what do you mean? And it's literally as if they weren't in the room hearing what you said. And the truth is they didn't hear what you said because they're doing what we call dissociation. So you're going to see these manifestations as, on one hand, more explosiveness and more sort of, you know, conflictual things with teammates when they're not regulated. And then you're gonna see situations where they're using this other adaptation where they get robotic and they kind of give you this overly compliant response. And you think you've communicated and you haven't. And it's so puzzling because you get mad because you think that they're disrespecting you, they're not listening to you, they blah, blah, blah. And so, again, I'll guarantee you that there are coaches right now who are listening to this are going, oh my God, that's what so-and-so is doing. And so I think that, again, what you can do as a coach is learn a little bit more about this. And then when you sort of find yourself running into a kid who's like a live wire, you realize, well, when I have a conversation with him, I should just say, hey, let's go take a walk. Or when I see that he's just sort of zoning out and agreeing with everything I say, I need to remember that he's probably not really processing this. So let's step back and I'll come back and go at this a different time in a different way. And I think once you do that, for one thing, as a coach, it kind of lets you off the hook about having to solve all these problems because you're never going to be able to. You know, it's just being able to recognize the manifestations of these behaviors is going to put you way ahead of the game. Now, with regards to, you know, how do you help these kids? The truth is being part of the team is helping them. You know, I can't underestimate the power of feeling connected for almost all of these kids. When you are having opportunities to feel included, that's rewarding and it's regulating and it literally is providing these tiny little doses of therapeutic healing that you can't get in traditional therapy. You know, and one of the things that we've been seeing in our work is that the best predictor for how well a child does or an adult after a traumatic event is the number and quality of relational little doses of relational interaction these kids have. And I can't think of a better place for that to happen than being part of a team. You literally have hundreds of these little doses of interaction where you have the potential to heal. And the great thing about it is you're doing it in context of a fundamentally regulating activity, you know, whether it's running or swimming or riding a bike or kicking a ball or dribbling, all of that stuff has regulation built into it. And that's why I love sport. I mean, it really is a fundamentally embracing, engaging, rewarding, and healing set of activities.
No, that's really affirming to hear you say that. I mean, one of the things that I, after reading your book, I shared with many coaches was a line in there that I was actually going to bring it up to you today. You just mentioned it there, which is that you learned that some of the most therapeutic experiences do not take place in therapy, but in naturally occurring healthy relationships. And so I have coaches that be reaching out, like, we've got this kid, he's got through this experience. How do I help? You know, well, initially your thing is like, well, you know, you're not qualified to help. Go seek, you know, somebody that is professional help. But now my biggest encouragement has been, keep working on building a culture where that everyone feels connected and feels respected. And there's just that getting your team culture right is the probably one of the number one things you can do as a coach. Absolutely. And helping them, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's something that we have not been able to, I think, appreciate in a lot of classroom settings, in a lot of coaching settings. We kind of want to pathologize, you know, the kid who has this event or these symptoms. And the reality is, as you said right at the outset, half of us have had these hard things. And half of us have had sleep problems or preoccupations or felt bad about ourselves or have had anxiety. We've all had emotional symptoms from hard things that have gone on in our lives. And we shouldn't pathologize that. It's just part of life. You can't get through life unscathed. Nobody does. But what we have are these wonderful healing mechanisms that are present in our naturally occurring groups, our teams, our workplace, our colleagues, our friends, our family. And sport, I think, in the modern world, is really creating a relationally dense environment that is increasingly absent from the modern world, right? We probably have 1/20th of the number of naturally occurring relational interactions now compared to when we, you know, 100 years ago. And that's because of screens and, you know, the nuclear family is changing and our neighborhoods are changing and everybody has their own room. And in their own room, they have their own TV and they're on two screens at once. And so the opportunities for these relational interactions are diminishing. And sport enriches that. I mean, I think, and the truth is, it's probably the same thing could be said about drama and orchestra and other things that bring people together in the service of a common activity.
So that's it for part one of our conversation with Dr. Perry. We'll be continuing it in next week's episode, going a little bit even deeper. But there's so much to take from today's episode. For one, our responsibility as coaches and building the right culture goes even further than I think I've ever imagined. And being something that is healthy and transformational and often healing for individuals. And we've got some great notes on this week's episode. If you want those notes, go to thriveonchallenge.com and subscribe there. You'll be added to the weekly newsletter with the pod, which includes the podcast notes PDF. Be sure to share this week's episode with your staff, your parents, your administrators. Share it to social media. So many people need to hear this message out there. And lastly, if you want to get the early bird pricing for our coaching culture workshop in Chicago on April 5th, be sure to register today at thriveonchallenge.com/public-workshop.